Inside on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts with offices in Iowa and Nebraska. It's realestateconcepts.net. And Iowa Computer Repair. You want your computer to work? That's what they do. IowaComputerRepair.com.
We're sitting with Mark Modzelinski, and we're talking about smart cities, entrepreneurial cities, what makes a city smart. And he is part of the Trust Belt 2017 seminar that took place here in Des Moines. Mark, welcome to the Business News Hour. Grateful to have you here,
man. Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I am captivated by your presentation. You're going to be talking about economic development, smart cities, and entrepreneurship. What in the world are cities supposed to be doing when we come to those three issues?
You know, I think what cities should be trying to do in these cases is really figure out what works for them. I think too many places are chasing this idea of being the next Silicon Valley or being the next New York or the next whatever. And a lot of them really aren't looking at the assets they have and making those stronger. So instead, they get caught in this global conversation first, rather than having a more micro conversation of, we do this well, this is good for our people, this will help our city grow, make people happier, make people stay here longer, make people enjoy living here.
And how does technology work into that?
You know, technology can work in a lot of fronts on this. I mean, technology can actually work as an aid to the city itself, allowing the city to have better traffic flow, allowing the city to help create more jobs. There's a lot of platforms that you could put in place where the city can do this. You know, everything from helping to tie people together, like one term that's used is platform cooperativism, where the city literally creates their own versions of Airbnb, or the city creates their own version of Uber, and they help align people's needs with people who are willing to perform those services. It could be as simple as the city saying, hey, there's potholes to be fixed. Is there a road crew that's available in the next day or two? Or we have elder care services where people need a visitor to their house to bring them a warm meal and check on them. And to be able to create these networks where the city themselves acts as a disruptive technology force, but also a job creator.
So what you're saying is rather than outsource those opportunities, the city itself becomes the deliverer of that information.
Yeah, I mean, in many cases, the city already does this. Unfortunately, what the city does is the whole spectrum. They're actually finding the workers. They're doing all these things, whereas the city can do it far more cost-effectively of creating a platform. You know, think about it. If you needed to get meals to a child after school and you were to find out you had 10,000 kids that were going hungry at night because they're latchkey kids, you could easily create a system whereby other moms, other dads could make food for them, have it delivered. The city can have a small budget for that. Everyone benefits. People will make money for making the meals and delivering them. The city gets those kids fed, and they spend a much smaller amount of money. And rather than saying a large valley firm with a CEO getting VC funding, making millions, the city can create an app like that for $120,000 or less even.
When we take a look at other entrepreneurial opportunities in cities, small cities, large cities, many of these communities are looking to the big players, the new Amazon. You know, where is it going to be? Boston, right? Or Austin or Chicago? But when we get down to really creating wealth among entrepreneurs, is there a better way that we could open up shops and stores and incentivize?
You know, I think a lot of that gets down to people's willingness to invest, a city's willingness to invest. You know, generally where entrepreneurs have problems is when they can't get that next round of funding. They're making money, but they're not able to go to a bank yet. Or maybe they're an immigrant entrepreneur and a bank's not willing to extend credit to them. And the city being able to play those gaps of either guaranteeing money or putting some of the money in the pool so other people feel safe to throw money in is a big advantage. We see a lot of that in, I just came back from living in Europe for a few years. And in Europe, the EU will actually guarantee upon a very good business plan and a good team, XYZ amount of money of funding, and that allows them to then go out and raise money from private sources that match and exceed that, and then they're all part of the same pool. If they're not able to raise that other money off of it, they don't get any money. But it creates an incentive and a guarantee where other people feel safe to get into the water and start playing around with these things.
Mark Modzelinski, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about entrepreneurship and smart cities. You had, off mic, you were talking about individuals who are in Los Angeles, for example, who are taco vendors.
Right.
And they're taco vendors, and maybe they don't have the correct licensure, and they're breaking the law, and that comes, there's a whole other bunch of issues along with that. But you shared with me an idea to move them off of the street and into a storefront. Explain that.
Yeah, sure. What we were looking at was to actually pool people who are interested in helping these communities, and that would include people with services. That would be lawyers, people who do taxes, people who actually know how to operate to get the right government licenses, and also people willing to make a small investment in their neighborhood. People who will throw money into the hat and just put in a pool of like $2,000 to help a new business get into a storefront. And anyone can do this. You can literally get the people together in your neighborhood and say, once a month, let's have a dinner together, be a potluck. We'll have three or four entrepreneurs come in. It could be a taco vendor. It could be someone who crochets hats. It could be a number of little businesses. And we're going to give them every dollar in the hat, just one person a month, and they can take that money and move to a storefront. Or they can move and create an e-commerce website. And they can advance their hobby or their very poorly earning livelihood and expand it into a much better one. And this is just one little way of starting to actually help your own community rise up using entrepreneurialism, using a small amount of investment, and just seeing change happen.
And building business out of what had been perhaps even a hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some variations of this, by the way, too. I have seen people who actually do it as a long-term loan. They'll actually have somebody come in. The people will guarantee like $5,000. They know it's high risk, but the person will eventually earn it off and pay it back. And that's certainly another way of doing it and advancing it and creating new entrepreneurs in your neighborhood instead of somebody who needs government assistance or may need some other kind of help.
And along with creating that new entrepreneur, if indeed they can occupy a storefront, then we have taxes coming back to the community.
Absolutely. You got a great place to eat on the end of your street. Yeah, you've got some new taxes in the community. Also, not having that empty storefront means that you're not going to have graffiti. You're not going to have crime, especially a first-time entrepreneur. They're the kind of people that are out sweeping the streets in front of their business, you know, making sure it's clean, making sure it's nice. They're the ones that are really sort of dug in and take root in a neighborhood. So those are the kind of people you want to encourage to stay.
When you take a look at cities across the United States, can you point to a couple of examples where this is happening right now, where people are doing this?
Well, you know, in a different way, there is actually a program. There's certainly efforts, for instance, in Somerville, Massachusetts, where I lived for a number of years, where the farmers market actually invites crafters on a regular basis to come and do it. I see this in Los Angeles, too. I should say my current neighborhood in Los Angeles has this as well, where they invite people who do crafts or who make their own foods or who do little side businesses to come in and sell very low cost, just enough to cover the space and some of the advertising, you know, maybe a $20 fee to set up a table, and to be able to sell that and to build that business and to build that awareness. And I have seen people go from that into full-scale businesses. So it does not take long. I know one guy, for instance, who was selling seafood that he caught himself and actually got a distribution deal with a local restaurant in Boston to actually supply some of the oysters. So, you know, these things can actually balloon if you give them the opportunity.
It's interesting you should say that. Here in the Des Moines market, I've seen salsa vendors that were at one time vending out of a truck at a farmer's market, or hot sauce guys, or all of those types of things, where now they're in 300-400 stores. They have actual distribution opportunities, and it's grown from absolutely nothing.
Yeah, one of my favorite restaurants actually in the Boston area, Clover, started out as a food truck, and now it's like 9 standalone restaurants, and they actually don't do the food trucks anymore because it's not profitable enough compared to the sit-down restaurants. So, you know, you see the evolution of these businesses, and it's amazing, but it's creating that environment and that safety for people to feel they can be entrepreneurs. And that's one of the things I think often gets lost. It's hard to take that risk.
And wherever my next question.
Yeah, it's really hard to take that risk, and wherever you can help that risk seem less scary, where you can give them the resources and help them, and also create that environment where people want to take that risk, that's one of the things that you really have to nurture if you want to create this in a city.
And if we have cities or towns, especially in even rural parts of the country, which are being decimated by this constant move from rural to urban, for jobs and opportunity. Yeah. There may be even opportunities in rural parts of the country.
I think there really are, and I think also wherever you can create, I mean, we are a nation, this is something we were also talking about earlier, we're a nation of individuals, but I think wherever people realize that they have a level of interdependence and where they can work together, where farmers can create cooperatives, for instance, or where they can ensure that maybe the local store doesn't go under, and they can pool their resources together to kind of do these things, or set up a farm stand together and actually be the agents for that kind of change. You know, these are things that they can all do to be more helpful. Technology can play a role in this. Technology is a great way of actually integrating all these different people and allowing them to see what their efforts are, be able to see who the potential markets are. And so there certainly is a role for technology binding it. But we also just need the real human contact, people to actually do business with each other and to reach out to each other and try and work together with each other.
One final question, Mark. We've talked about technology a couple of times. There are still parts of Iowa, surprised, that are still working off of 56K modems. How much of an economic driver is high-speed internet access to rural part? I mean, here in the Des Moines metro, when I tell people there are still pockets of Iowa that are running off of 56K modems, they look at me like I've got a third eye. It's true.
Yeah.
How much of an economic level playing field is it to make sure that even rural areas have access?
Yeah, it's hugely important. I mean, being able to operate at those kind of speeds is the current lingua franca. You need that to actually even do business right now. And one of the problems we have politicians, and not to throw them under the bus, but I'm going to in this case, they cut deals with individual cable companies and various ISPs to say that they had sole control of a market and then didn't hold them accountable. There was a case recently in another state that's very rural and very farm-like, which is Vermont, where Comcast got the rights of the state but then didn't want to pay the money to actually give the rural areas of the state it. And with the responsibility and with the profits of doing that, they need to be held accountable and deliver the same quality service to everyone. And that's where the politicians need to stand up, not giving them benefits and tax breaks to move and expand an office. Making them actually create opportunity for everyone that lives in their state is key.
Wow. Good stuff. His name is Mark Modzelewski.
Thanks so
I'm
much.
I'm going to give it a
it's
shot.
It's close, man. Enough.
So you had a business. You were just came from Poland. Tell us that story. So you go to Poland and you say, hey, my name is. And they're looking at you like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. We Americanize everything in America, including our ethnic names. So I certainly found that in Poland.
And they said, what is your real name, right?
Yeah, I think they pronounce it like a J sound, Modzelewski.
There you go. Well, Mark, thanks for coming
Thank
by.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it.
What a great conversation with Mark about smart cities, how to create more economic development with things that you already have in your community. Makes a lot of sense to us. Mark, part of the Trust Belt 2017 tour. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take a look at what happened today on Wall Street. What happened with the markets? Up, down, in the middle? We'll have all the numbers when we come back. This is Insight on Business, the NewsHour.